21. Salt of Sofia. Tito crossed Amsterdam, passing the gray, snow-dusted stalks of a makeshift public garden, then walked quickly along 111th toward Broadway. The snow had stopped falling. He recognized his cousin Bianca in the distance by the Banco Popular, dressed like a teenager. Who else would be out, he wondered, for his ride back to Chinatown? By the time he'd reached the Broadway median, Bianca was no longer visible. Attaining the western sidewalk, he turned south, heading for the 110th Street stop, hands in his pockets. Passing a framing shop, he picked her up in the depths of a mirror, crossing diagonally, a few yards behind his left shoulder. Descending into the tiled trench of the subway, thinly roofed with iron and asphalt, he saw his breath rising. The number one local arrived, like a sign, just as he reached the platform. He would return slowly on the one to Canal, then walk east. He boarded the train, certain that Bianca and at least two others were doing the same. Protocol for the detection and identification of followers required a minimum of three. As they left 66th Street, Carlito entered from the car behind. Tito's car was almost empty. Bianca sat near the front end, apparently engrossed in a small video game. Carlito wore a dark gray top coat, a scarf a shade lighter, black leather gloves that made it look to Tito as though his hands might be carved from wood, and black rubbers over the polished calfskin of his Italian shoes. He looked conservative, foreign, unassimilated, and somehow religious. He seated himself to Tito's left.
Juana, he asked in Spanish. She is well?
Yes, Tito said. She seems well.
You have met him?
It was not a question.
Yes, Tito said. You have your instructions?
Yes.
Tito felt Carlito slip something into his pocket.
Bulgaro,
Carlito said, identifying the object for him.
Charged?
Yes,
a new valve.
The Bulgarians' guns were close to half a century old now, but still functioned with great efficiency. It was sometimes necessary to replace the Schrader valve set into the flat steel reservoir that also served as a grip, but there were remarkably few moving parts.
Loaded?
Salt,
Carlito said. Tito remembered the salt cartridges, with their yellowed glassine membranes sealing either end of an inch-long, strangely scented cardboard tube.
You must prepare now to go away.
For how long?
Tito knew that this was not an entirely acceptable question to ask, but it was the sort of question that Alejandro had taught him to at least consider asking. Carlito didn't answer. Tito was on the verge of asking what his father had been doing for the old man when he died.
He must not be captured.
Carlito touched the knot in his scarf with his stiff, gloved hands.
You must not be captured. Only the item you are delivering must be captured, and they must not suspect you of having given it to them.
What do we owe him, Uncle?
He saw our way here. He honored his word.
Carlito rose as the train pulled into 59th Street. One gloved hand rested for an instant on Tito's shoulder.
Do well, nephew.
He turned and was gone. Tito glanced past boarding passengers, hoping to see Bianca still there, but she too was gone. He reached into his jacket's side pocket, finding the Bulgarian's singular, meticulously made weapon. It was folded loosely, within a fresh white cotton handkerchief from China, still stiff with sizing. On drawing it from your pocket, those around you might think you were about to blow your nose. Without looking, Tito knew that the cardboard cylinder of carefully milled salt filled the entirety of the very short barrel. He left it where it was. Now that the Bulgarians' rubber gaskets had been replaced with silicone, an effective charge could be maintained for up to 48 hours. The salt, he wondered, was it Bulgarian? Where had those cartridges been made? In Sofia? In Moscow, perhaps? In London,
where the Bulgarian was said to have worked before Tito's grandfather had brought him to Cuba, or in Havana, where he'd lived out his days. The train pulled away from Columbus Circle.